haven't changed what you voted for. So looking at you now, I know that you're wishing that you voted something more. Moving forward, hoping that the nation would be freed from the hands of ignorance and greed. But you know the slogan always needed just one more word. Hope, struggle, and change. Hope, struggle, and change. There's trouble and danger on the road to justice. Gonna keep on hoping, gonna keep my eyes open. And change will come, but it won't be easy. You know the civil rights didn't fall to us the moment Rosa Parks stepped on that bus. So many fought and died for racial justice before and after. And suddenly a ray of hope appears, but only after years and years and years. And only because of blood and sweat and tears and yes, even laughter. Hope, struggle, and change. Hope, struggle, and change. There's trouble and danger on the road to justice. Gonna keep on hoping, gonna keep my eyes open. And change will come. Change will come, but it won't be easy. Elizabeth Cady Stanton never saw a woman's right to vote become the law. But women everywhere now know the awesome load she carried. And Stonewall didn't settle any fight. There'd been a lot of stonewalling since that night. But one more state just recognized the right of people to be married. Hope, struggle, and change. Struggle and change. There's trouble and danger on the road to justice. Gonna keep on hoping, gonna keep my eyes open. And the change will come, but it won't be easy. We gotta hope and cry, work until we die. We gotta plan and fail, spend the night in jail. We gotta really get pissed, resist, to raise a fist. We gotta try to guarantee. We gotta sweat, no doubt, get the vote out. We gotta howl, yell, raise a lot of hell. We gotta educate and organize to keep our eyes on the prize. So asking any president to make fundamental change, that's our mistake. We gotta be a giant just awakening from its slumber. You know the moral arc of the universe is bending ever better, never worse. It's almost like the human race rehearsing for its big number. Sing with me!
Oh, struggle and change.
Returning to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice, I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program starts out with Steven Pinker talking about the decline of violence. Steven Pinker is a professor of psychology at Harvard University. He is the author of 8 books, including The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. He's a 2-time Pulitzer Prize finalist and one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People and one of Foreign Policy's Top 100 Global Thinkers. And then after that, starving polar bears. Polar bears have long been the poster species for the problem of climate change, but a new paper argues that supplemental feeding may be necessary to prevent polar bear populations from going extinct. A polar bear expert joins Steve Curwood to discuss how we can save the largest bear on the planet. And then after that, Lyndon B. Johnson introduces the Great Society. LBJ was the 36th president of the United States. From 1963 to 1969, he is one of the only four people who served in all four elected federal offices in the United States: representative, senator, vice president, and president. The goals of the Great Society social reforms were the elimination of poverty and racial injustice.
Welcome to Point of Inquiry. I'm Chris Mooney.
And I'm Indre Viskonis. Point of Inquiry is a radio show and podcast of the Center for Inquiry, a think tank advancing reason, science, and secular values in public affairs and at the grassroots. Since the horrendous massacres that occurred in December in Newtown, Connecticut, gun control and the Second Amendment have been topics of the national conversation. At Point of Inquiry, we would be remiss if we didn't add our signature long-form interview style to the conversation. So we've decided to invite someone whose thesis is that, in fact, violence has declined over time, and we are living in what might be the most peaceful time in human existence. Steven Pinker is a professor of psychology at Harvard University. He's the author of 8 books, 2 of which were Pulitzer Prize finalists, and the books include How the Mind Works, The Language Instinct, The Blank Slate, and most recently, The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. He is one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people, and one of Foreign Policy's 100 top global thinkers. Welcome to Point of Inquiry, Steven Pinker.
Thank you.
I wanted to start off by asking, what inspired you to write a book about violence?
It's a natural topic for anyone who's interested in human nature. The question, is our species innately violent and war-loving, or innately peaceful and cooperative, goes back literally hundreds of years, maybe thousands. So it naturally falls under the category of psychology. In my particular case, it began with my books, How the Mind Works and The Blank Slate, where I advocated the idea that there is such a thing as human nature, some parts of which can be rather nasty, that we have urges like revenge and dominance that can erupt in violence. And I had to anticipate an objection that I knew would come, namely, if we do have these tendencies that can erupt in violence, does that mean we have to have a fatalistic attitude toward war and peace and violence? Violence is in the genes. We're killer apes. We have homicidal DNA. Therefore, there's nothing you can do about it. And I pointed out that this is a total non sequitur. The answer is no, we don't have to be fatalistic, because for one thing, human nature is a complicated system. Even if we do have urges that can result in violence, we also have all of these systems that can inhibit our urges toward violence, and whether we're actually violent depends on which part of human nature prevails, and that can change with the circumstances. And I said there can't be a theoretical debate over whether we're doomed to a constant rate of violence, because you open up the history books and it's clear that rates of violence change. And I gave a few examples of cases that I knew of at the time. This was back in the 90s, of how rates of violence had come down. For example, from the Middle Ages to the present, at least in England, there was a 35-fold decrease in the rate of homicide. Or if you look at the kind of life that our ancestors presumably lived, without foraging lifestyle, without a government and police force, the rates of death in tribal warfare were really, really high, higher than even the 20th century with our world wars. So anyway, I made these observations, and I said, there's no philosophical a priori debate about whether rates of violence can change. History tells us they can change. A few years later, John Brockman, my literary agent and the proprietor of Edge.org, asked 150 scientists, philosophers, writers to give him a couple of paragraphs on the question, what are you optimistic about? And I kind of, cut and pasted and tweaked those sections, and it went online. Then I got this slew of correspondence from experts on violence who said, you really understated the case. There are many other cases where there have been dramatic declines in violence. And these are from scattered scholarly communities who had nothing to do with each other. So, for example, scholars in international relations who study war and peace would say things like, it used to be that countries in Europe would start 2 new wars a year for 500 years. As of 1945, that went to 0. Military historians have just been astonished at the fact that war between developed countries has pretty much ceased to exist. Other scholars said, you know, it's not just England where the homicide rate plunged since the Middle Ages. It's also Italy and Germany and Switzerland and Scandinavia. Then other people said, well, and it's not just war between rich countries. If you look at statistics on war worldwide, since 1990, they have been going down, 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 and fewer people are killed in war than ever before. And then one of my colleagues in the psychology department said, well, you could have added that rates of child abuse, approval of spanking, domestic violence, all of them are down. And so I thought, geez, I've got, first of all, no one knows about these facts, and they're pretty important facts, as, you know, the arithmetic sign of trends of violence, positive or negative, kind of a basic fact about violence, and everyone thinks it's gone up and it's gone down. But then it also posed a kind of delicious challenge to a psychologist.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Ye come here, gather round the stage. The time has come for us to voice our rage against the ones who've trapped us in a cage to steal from us the value of our wage. From underneath the vestiture of law, the lobbyists at Washington do gnaw. At liberty, the bureaucrats guffaw. And until they are purged, we won't withdraw. We'll occupy the streets. We'll occupy the courts. We'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. Our nation was built upon the right of every person to improve their plight. The laws of this republic they rewrite, and now a few own everything in sight. They own it free of liability. They own that they are not like you and me. Their influence dictates legality. And until they are stopped, we are not free. We'll occupy the streets. We'll occupy the courts. We'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You enforce your monopolies with guns while sacrificing our daughters and sons. But certain things belong to everyone. Your thievery has left the people none. So take heed of our notice to redress. We had little to lose, we must confess. Your empty words do leave us unimpressed. A growing number join us in protest. We occupy the streets, we occupy the courts, we occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You can't divide us into sides, and from our gaze you cannot hide. Denial serves to amplify, and our allegiance you can't buy. Our government is not for sale. The banks do not deserve a bail. We will not reward those who fail. We'll not move till we prevail. We'll occupy the streets. We'll occupy the courts. We'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We'll occupy the streets. We'll occupy the courts. We'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We are the many, you are the few.
Two challenges, really. One of them is, why has there been so much violence in the past? And secondly, how is it that violence managed to come down? So those are the two psychological questions that got me going.
So you paint, in a sense, in the past, a kind of, we lived in a Game of Thrones world, if you will. Brutal violence, right? Horrific violence. So then, I mean, I guess to just set you up, what is the causal reason for some kind of change?
Yeah, I think there are a number of reasons. In part because there are a number of causes of violence, and neurobiologists and neuroethologists have long known that there's no such thing as aggression, because there are multiple systems in the brain that make organisms, including Homo sapiens, aggressive, and so you'd expect there to be multiple causes that would drive them down. I think the first and foremost is probably government, the Hobbes' theory of the Leviathan. If you've got a state with a monopoly on violence, they can penalize incentives for aggression and exploitation by imposing penalties that cancel out the gain. You rob a liquor store, you're likely to be thrown in jail. You think twice about robbing the liquor store. But that also makes everyone more peaceful, because not only are you disincentivized from committing aggression, but you know that your enemies are too. And so that has a reverberating effect. You no longer have to maintain a belligerent macho stance to deter your enemies, because the government's doing it for you. You no longer have to pursue vengeance after the fact at all costs, because again, you can outsource that to the government. So number one, I think, would be the Leviathan. And we see it that the remaining zones of violence are basically zones of anarchy.
Mm-hmm. But that's kind of a game theory. It's assuming everyone's being rational, right? I mean, they're calculating to some extent. But of course, a lot of this is very emotional, right?
Yes, that's right. And although I think the rational incentives and the emotional reactions can play off each other, that if you live in a society where there is a rule of law for long enough, you start to get it changes your emotions. So you're less likely to react with rage if someone gives you the finger or calls you a nasty name, and so you don't challenge them to a knife fight. But you say, I'll walk away. So in the book, I talk about the interplay between these rational calculations and just what's intuitively you do, you don't do, norms.
One of the things I really loved about your book is how you couched a lot of these issues within the prisoner's dilemma framework. And so I'd like to take a moment to sort of have you describe what is the prisoner's dilemma and how can we apply it to something like gun control, where you have this movement of people saying, well, I need a gun because everybody else has a gun, and so don't take away my right to have a gun. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, I alluded to the version of the prisoner's dilemma. I called it the pacifist's dilemma, but it has the same structure. It's just putting different labels in the cells as a way of trying to, of answering the somewhat mysterious question of why multiple historical forces all seem to be pushing rates of violence down. So Chris asked, what are some of the causes? And I, in a long-winded way, explained one of them. And I'll be shorter-winded in identifying some of the others, which are trade and commerce, which changes, again, in game theoretic terms, has people playing more positive-sum games and fewer zero- or negative-sum games, or to put it more concretely, if you have networks of trade and exchange, it becomes cheaper to buy stuff than to steal it, and other people become more valuable to you alive than dead. And so as you have a rise of commerce and trade, the incentives change and people get less violent. Third is expanding circle of sympathy, that as we consume more fiction, history, journalism, person-to-person contact, it becomes a little harder to dehumanize other people. That kind of expands your sense of empathy, decreases your taste for cruelty. I think the empowerment of women has been a factor, that across societies and across eras, societies in which women have more rights and more of a voice tend to have less macho violence. And I think that reason and science have played a role, that as people intellectualize the human condition, step back, they look at violence as a problem to be solved rather than as a game that has to be won. So, I'm being long-winded, but I'll
try to... No, you can ask my last four questions.
This is the long-form interview, and that's what we're known for.
But I do want
yeah, just to answer your question, I do have a point here. And the point is, okay, so I list these five different reasons that violence has gone down. So no one could call this a reductionistic, simplistic theory. But why have five different forces all pushed in the same direction? Is there some kind of mysterious arc that bends towards justice? Is there some dialectical process where the man ascends and will eventually reach a utopia of perfect coexistence? And the answer is no. I think that there's a more mundane explanation, which is, and now we get to your question, the pacifist dilemma, which is that violence is in an objective sense, it is really a bad thing. It's a nuisance. It's a plague. It's a pestilence. And the reason is that even though it's always tempting to an aggressor to exploit a victim, but it's far more damaging to the victim than it is beneficial to the aggressor. Now, over the long run, since aggressors can become victims and so on, and vice versa, empires rise, empires fall, you can, today's aggressor is tomorrow's victim. Objectively, everyone would really be better off if everyone could forswear violence. It really is a better way to live than to, blow things up and destroy flesh and end life and all of that nasty stuff. The reason that it's not so simple is that how do you get the other guy to renounce violence at the same time as you do? And this is where the game theoretic calculation comes in. Because if I beat my swords into plowshares and the other guy keeps his as a sword, I could find myself at the wrong end of a rather unpleasant confrontation. So how do we both beat our swords into plowshares at the same time? Mm-hmm. And the common denominator, so I think that is the human dilemma. That's like disease. It's like hunger. It's a part of the human condition that sucks.
Change him, his mind was not in prison, was only his body, man. Ooh. the sea, I many people ask I, why am I a Rasta man? No matter what the battle be, I still am trying my hand. Many people say I, many people ask I, why am I a Rasta man? How sweet the name of Georgia sound to every righteous Rasta man. And the same old Rasta man told me pound, shilling and pins would come out of circulation and be with you that shoot Birdman. And I have seen 7 years after that it was no use, man. Donkey horses and cows keep on treading up and heaping him, man. Hey, everyone I see I, everyone has time. Why am I a Rasta man? I'm here to prove and to testify about prophecy. Everyone I see I, everyone has I. Why am I a Rasta man? John the Baptist, Marcus, Gavi and Christ, they was a Rasta man. Everyone I see I, everyone has I. Why am I a Rasta man? I bow the bow up a Nazarite and I can't do no otherwise, man. Rasta man, I love my brothers and my sisters and I cannot give up at all, man. Brother Brown, Brother Coos, Brother Tom, Brother Stanley, man, I used to hear them beat the drum and sing way in the forest land. Hey, everyone see I, everyone Rasta. Why am I a Rasta man? I love the beat of the Naya Bingi that calls a creation.
And now for something completely different.